In this week's market update, why sell in May can be both right and wrong, markets ignore politics in the UK, what inflation might mean for the 60-40 portfolio, and the dangers of seeing what you want to see. Well, it's a quiet week in the markets, but with shares and commodities hitting new highs and inflation in focus, there's plenty for investors to be thinking about. Let's start with that old seasonal chestnut, sell in May and go away, don't come back till St. Ledger Day. This stock market adage gets wheeled out at this time every year, and my usual conclusion on the basis of our analysis going back to the start of the FTSE 100 in 1984 is that it works some years, doesn't in others, and is therefore not much help as a guide for investors. Just to remind you of what sell in May is, the saying refers to the statistically significant evidence over time that stock markets tend to do better between October and May than they do over the summer months. St. Ledger Day, by the way, is a race meeting held in September, traditionally marking the end of the British summer social season, hence the saying. No one really knows why shares do better in the winter, and as I say, the unpredictability of returns in any one year makes it pretty worthless as a guide to actually managing your portfolio. The other reason not to follow the guidance is that moving in and out of the market wholesale in this way is expensive and an extreme form of market timing, which we always discourage because no one can do it consistently well. Anyway, this week, some analysis by our colleagues in Boston provided two other reasons to steer clear of sell in May. The first relates to the fact that while over the past 50 years it's paid to switch out of the S&P 500 into cash or bonds or even defensive utility shares over the summer months, over the past 10 years the reverse has been the case. The reason for this seems to be that the past 10 years have been a strong bull market, and seasonality and corrections are less pronounced when the market is rising fast. The second reason is that almost all the long-term outperformance by the various sell in May strategies is a consequence of what happened in the 2000 to 2002 post-dot-com bear market and in the financial crisis. Most of the time, sell in May is just an expensive and impractical insurance policy. Talking of things that are both true but also largely unimportant for the stock market, this week's political developments here in the UK are at the same time potentially far-reaching but perhaps inconsequential for investors. The elections came as no great surprise in England. The government has benefited from a vaccine bounce, the tendency for people to support their leaders in a crisis, and the difficulty for an opposition to oppose when everyone is stuck at home. Labour has a lot of work to do if it's to stage a meaningful recovery before the likely next general election in 2024. More interesting is Scotland, where the SNP came within one seat of the majority that would have made it even more difficult for the UK government to continue resisting calls for a second independence referendum. As it is, with the support of the pro-independence Greens, Nicola Sturgeon's party has a comfortable majority in favour of another vote on withdrawing from the Union. The government will resist, but it can't maintain that position indefinitely, and another vote does seem likely in due course. From a market perspective, that would probably be unsettling for the pound, a bit less so for London's international-facing stock market. The impact, however, is limited by the fact that any move towards independence would be several years away in practice. There are plenty of bigger things to worry about in the meantime. One of those bigger concerns comes into focus again this week. Inflation is coming back onto investors' radars as one of the best earnings seasons in years is marred by one persistent gripe from chief executives: rising input costs. This Wednesday, the latest core consumer prices index data in the US will provide a clear indicator of whether inflation is starting to become a real problem again. Economists expect a rise from March's 1.6% inflation rate to 2.3% in April, which would be the highest level since the pandemic struck more than a year ago. Markets are unsure. Fears about inflation saw the yield on 10-year Treasury bonds rise to 1.75% earlier in the spring, but it fell back to under 1.6%, and last week's dismal non-farm payroll employment data provided the bad news that investors increasingly view as the good news that the Federal Reserve will continue to hold back on tightening monetary policy for the foreseeable future. Here in the UK, inflation is even less of an immediate concern than in the US. But that said, it's also looming on the horizon as the Bank of England last week upgraded its growth forecast for the UK economy to 7.25% this year, its fastest rate since just after the Second World War. 3 months ago, it was looking for growth of just 5%. Before we get carried away, however, it's worth noting that the fast rate of growth is in response to last year's savage fall in economic activity during the first lockdown. Market expectations are that interest rates will still only need to be 0.6% in 3 years' time to keep inflation at the bank's 2% target. Elsewhere in the world, inflation is also starting to appear as a market concern. In China, while consumer price inflation is this week expected to grow by only 1%, factory gate prices are rising much faster. Producer price inflation is expected to hit 6.5%, which will be the fastest pace of growth since 2017. Perhaps of more interest to investors is the impact that even a modest rise in inflation could have on the interaction between shares and bonds. That's because there seems to be a trigger point of around 3% inflation, above which shares and bonds stop acting as a counterpoint to each other. Higher inflation is bad news for both shares and bonds, and in that environment, the two will tend to move in the same direction. Below 3%, they tend to diverge, which means a mixed portfolio of shares and bonds can give investors a smoother ride. Now, the classic 60-40 portfolio, that's 60% shares, 40% bonds, is premised on those two assets behaving differently. If they don't, there's no diversification benefit in holding both of them, and investors might question why they are investing in bonds which offer a low yield and little prospect of capital gain. In the late 1960s and 1970s, when inflation became a major problem for investors, cash and gold were better diversifiers than bonds. And sure enough, as inflation expectations have started to rise, real inflation-adjusted interest rates have fallen further into negative territory, which is traditionally a good backdrop for the gold price. That's because negative interest rates make zero-yielding gold seem relatively more attractive. In the past 10 weeks or so, the gold price has recovered from under $1,700 an ounce to nearly $1,850. Finally, as bull markets mature, and we are now 12 years into this one, I like to keep a wary eye out for red flags and alarm bells, not so much in the data as in the way people talk about the markets. So back in 2000, it became increasingly obvious that the market was losing its grip on reality, when otherwise sensible people would say things like, valuations don't matter, it's all about eyeballs. So back then, investors were more interested in the growth potential of new websites, the growth in eyeballs, than in whether they would produce revenues or profits. It was a sign of the top of the market. Well, this week, I read something along the same lines that said, earnings-based valuations are not the point now. It's all about cash flow in a low-yield world. Now, maybe it's true that share prices should be much more expensive on traditional measures if interest rates are going to stay low for the foreseeable future. Maybe the two biggest post-war bull markets in the 1950s and 60s, and again in the 1980s and 1990s, delivered significantly bigger returns than we've yet enjoyed since 2009, and they lasted much longer. Maybe the S&P 500 really is on its way to 8,000. But when investors start to say it's different this time, I start to be a little concerned.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.